Decorating Pages podcast presents Production Design Film Study. This class examines Oscar-nominated films spanning a century of cinema. Accomplished professionals in production design will explore and dissect the sets featured in these nominated films and will educate why they were recognized for the design of their time. This class features the films of 1985. This year's films are reviewed by set decorator Kim Wanup and production designer Adam Rao.
So, let's start, and I don't think I picked this year. You just said, like, I'm happy you picked this year, but I thought we were just doing 65, 75, 85.
Well, we were, but somebody had to pick the first time we did it. So I was happy to inherit this group of years. First of all, I feel like a little bit like I'm like either Bette Midler or Betty White on the Johnny Carson show, because you kind of I'm glad to keep coming back.
Yes, you are my recurring guest.
Or I'm like your field reporter who's at the grocery store at the gas station on the corner.
Well, because I first proposed this to you and you were into it and you're really good at it.
Well, thanks. I am into it. And I have this thing that happens. It's kind of like, I mean, it's not the same thing, but it's in the same part of my brain. When you go on vacation, you come back from vacation, you kind of have the vacation blues.
Yeah.
You like don't do it this great suitcase of memories and things that just happened to you. So when I do these movies, I really dive into them. And so what happens is that after I finish the last one, I have like 3 or 4 days where I'm like, oh. And what I like about the experience of watching the movies is that I watch them with an objective point of view, like I'm watching for a reason, and then somehow it's making watching certain movies more enjoyable.
Yeah.
But when the movie's really good, because I'm watching it to kind of judge it and keep my eye out, I'm really involved. You know, it's fun. And I also have been enjoying all these older movies so much better than newer movies.
Me too.
I have watched a couple of new things on, you know, Netflix, Amazon, and I've just been like, I'd rather go back to the old stuff.
It seems
like I'm learning that our tastes changed very dramatically somewhere in the early 2000s or late 90s. And the way a narrative unfolds, I think a lot of people think a lot of these movies are boring.
But I find
them to be better storytelling.
There's so much more story and more bite into these movies and depth of story, like you're saying. And I do think there is a huge shift in the early 2000s of films and what we're looking at as far as like what the story is, but what we're looking at visually, because technology advanced so much and what was starting to get nominated. If you start looking at those 2000 movies up until now, it's a different game.
Yeah, you're right. It is true. It's a different game. Like they did black and white and color. It almost feels like we're going to get to the point where we should be doing non-computer scenery and computer scenery.
Yes.
You know, because they are two different, you have to approach them so differently. What else was interesting about this particular year, 1985, is that I looked up because Brazil, which we'll talk about in depth, but I was very inspired by that movie. And I was like, wow, it does not, one of these things is not like the other, like that movie is so different than the other five.
Yeah.
And in the same decade, we later got Beetlejuice and Edward Scissorhands, and we got these movies that were outrageous, and you would never be able to sell a movie like that nowadays. I mean, even Everything Everywhere All at Once was like probably a super risk,
right?
But yet it won an Oscar. But I still don't think producers are taking the risks like they did with Brazil, which clearly had a big budget and was well supported.
I think we should go alphabetical. So okay. We're gonna do the nominated films this year for 1985 were Brazil, The Color Purple, Out of Africa, which was the winner, Ran, and Witness. So if we can, if my thing will work. So Witness, so Brazil, production designer Norman Garwood and set decorator Maggie Gray is a story of a bureaucrat in a dystopic society becomes an enemy of the state as he pursues the woman of his dreams. This should have been the winner.
100%, hands down. 100%, there's I want to know the politics of why it didn't. Like, that's what I thought about. Why didn't it win?
There is no question that this design, and it happens in other years, the futuristic design or something else doesn't win. And it's mind-boggling. 1980, TESS won over Empire Strikes Back. No. I don't know who was voting.
Wow, that's interesting. No, see, that's great. And I know you trained me to do this. Did you look up what other movies were made this year?
Yes. So
this year was incredible.
Well, Back to the Future, Legend, Return to Oz, Young Sherlock Holmes. I mean, those were the ones that kind of stuck out for me. I mean, the Princey's Honor and Kiss of the Spider-Woman, Cocoon, Jagged Edge, all these other, Trip to Bountiful, that's a beautiful movie, Sweet Dreams, period.
Goonies.
Yeah, which Goonies.
Michael Riva also did. I'll save talking about that for Color Purple.
Yeah, I mean.
And Chorus Line, I actually thought, that I think is Patrizia Van Brandenstine. I think that was her first movie, maybe, or early movie.
Oh, I don't know.
I mean, I it stood out for me because it was so not designed, but it was designed so well. It didn't, it looked natural.
Well, yeah.
Anyway, the reason why I bring that up is because you're good at always talking about that. This movie should have been an easy vote.
Yeah.
So is this a symptom of what I call the Saturday Night Live syndrome? No offense, Saturday Night Live. Yeah. But like, they get a vote every year from a lot of people because people know it so well.
Yeah.
And because you had Meryl Streep in Out of Africa, not that those people didn't do a great job, but like, this movie so clearly was imaginative, inventive, and everything was touched, but it never felt overwrought. It felt believable in its own context. I just loved it so much.
There's so much going on in every set that it's really hard to intake all of it when you're watching Brazil. There's so much. Look, this is like the beginning of steampunk. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is this, like, and the scale that they give it and the imagination that they give it and, like,
The cohesion here is what screams to me, is that like, people were united. There was a producer or a network or somebody said, yes, we want to pump some money into this. I mean, not everything is expensive. There's a lot of stuff in here that looks like it was hodgepodge, but it's all done in the same world. And that's what stuck out to me so well. It's still very cohesive.
This is also, it was also a huge flop.
I didn't realize it was. Wow.
It was 15 million and it grossed opening weekend 30,000. The gross worldwide to date is 9.9 million.
Wow. So there's something. I did read that it was heavily edited by, I think, Universal. Like, they wanted a happy ending. It does not have a happy ending.
Yeah.
And the critics loved it or whatever. I don't know the whole story, but I can tell you that creatively, it's well done. It plays with scale. It plays with form. It plays with color. Like, it does all the things that are a wet dream in design. And like, look at that location that they found on the top. Like, really went for it and they didn't hold back. And I was proud of them at the end of the day for it. It feels like this movie then gives us other things like Dick Tracy and Blade Runner.
Yeah.
I think Blade Runner happened after this.
Blade Runner was before this, right? Blade Runner was 1980, I think.
Oh, okay. Well,
I guess 81 or something.
I guess what I'm saying in that is that the scale of things was being toyed with in this era, much like the Lawrence of Arabia times. I mean, certain movies play with scale and some don't. And this one was, you need movies to show that scale matters every once in a while for people to be like, oh yeah, we need this sweeping view. Yeah, this scene here was one of my favorites.
This is so great. I mean, how do you get everything you need inside a 6x6 room-ish and still have a camera and still have a scene and still have it lit and still enforce all of the design elements that you have through the movie into this tiny room in the scene? It's really great.
Yeah, these types of scenes, and there's a what was that fake cop show with it was a cop show that was on that was like Naked Gun, that was on TNT, I think.
Oh.
Who was Amy Poehler's sidekick in Park and Recreation?
Adam Scott.
Oh no.
Yeah. Yeah, the chick.
Yeah, that actress played in this cop show. There's a scene like that. Oh my God, I gotta look it up. Hang on a second. I can't believe I can't remember. I know. What is the cop show?
Quincy Jones' daughter, Rashida Jones. And it's called like something detective or something. Amy begins with an A. I don't know. But also, I mean, this film is so much bigger design-wise than any of these other films. Like, there's just
you're right. Well, I'll hold on a second. I would say that I agree with you in design, but I would say that what Africa did to Out of Africa and its sweeping views and its gorgeous everything, because Africa wins the Oscar for that. This did this with 100% scenery. And that's what was so incredible, is that scenery was the vista, and they found great locations to kind of support it.
It's all London. It's all England. It's all in England. London, Croydon, Buckinghamshire, Holland Park, Mintmore, Addison Road, Holland Park. It's all the location work is in England.
Okay. And like even that, like you had that model shot where it starts as a model and then goes back. Like that to me was such clever.
Yeah.
Everything. Like it's just, I don't know. They never, Angie Tribeca. Thank you. It took a while. Sorry. Andrew Tribeca has a scene like that. And the reason why I bring it up is because it's a tiny apartment, and when you do tiny or you do messy, you have to get your AD and your second AD and your DP and your lighting team all on board. Because if people aren't on board, all of a sudden your set has to get so much bigger to accommodate it. And so what I loved about that tiny office is they actually used it quite a bit. It wasn't like a throwaway sight gag. Like there was some fighting between the desks. And again, this is the perfect example of showing scale in a movie. You have this tiny thing, and then you have the last big grand finale set, which is that huge, whatever that room was, that was circular. This designer and this team were totally on board with scale. And that takes a lot of, I think, political power from a director or a director of photography. Even the detail that there's a barcode on the desk, like, or a serial number. It's such a great theme of like man against machine or man against technology throughout the whole thing. And they never forgot it. They plugged into this concept and they went the whole way.
And all of the graphics, throughout the offices, and that's all like fantastic too.
And neon, there is neon that happens quite a bit. Glass block happens a lot. Yeah. Like this person, I don't know who, I mean, the designer or who, like they were using objects in a way an orchestra conductor uses them, because they come in and out. You kind of see them and you get these themes. You obviously have the ducting that's happening. You can see ducting and neon in this shot. And this is a dream sequence. Kind of almost get, for any of those of you who like Dark Crystal, the Skeksis are in this. There's kind of like these like Muppet creatures in this scene here.
Well, this designer also was with Terry Gilliam on Time Bandits. And he also did The Princess Bride, Glory, Hook, Lost in Space, and Rollerball in 2002.
It's funny because none of those movies connect to this, which is even more exciting for this designer, because like they did one thing and then Hook is so different. Hook is wildly imaginative too, but it's so different than what this is.
Yeah, it's more fanciful.
This scene was... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
It's fantastic, because there's always like you already have this room and then you throw a holiday on top of it, and it's like a shitty, it's like it's not greatly decorated or anything. It's like they threw the elements that you think of in there, like this weirdo tree back there that's like out of control, the garlands like everywhere.
Yeah, there's a really funny prop moment too in the restaurant where the menus are brought out and they're big and clunky and they light up, and it was just like, gosh, everybody was on board to have a good time in this movie. Yeah, there's that neon again. It just kind of comes in and out. And you know, neon wasn't new
at this time. It's so 80s though. It actually is so 80s.
Yeah, you're right. The other thing I wanted to mention too is that like they obviously were inspired by Metropolis and film noir, and both of those things just keep on coming. They never stop. You see those themes all the way through the movie. Like, look at the thickness in those doors. Anybody else would have made them thin because of budget potentially. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, they constantly just were like, no, we're going to do it.
And this, like, getting the shot of, like, that foreground piece is perfect.
Like the symmetry. You got to wonder if that was, like, a model piece or something that was in the foreground so they didn't have to build it, you know, one story tall. Or maybe they did build it a story tall. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean,
oh yeah, the walk and talk in this scene was
bonkers. Look at all this dressing.
I kind of had a moment where I was, did they just build one side and film it reverse? Because you kind of go down both sides, but you don't see this other side very often. And I was like, oh, did they build one in reverse and repeat so that they, you know, in camera, so that they could make it twice as big? Because this is a ton of work.
This is a ton of work. I think you might be right, but there are people on that other side, and there is a full wall over there. So maybe they just went around.
Yeah, and like there's a scene where the guy's walk, you know, moving quickly, and everyone's following him. So, you know, this makes me wonder, is this a location, and that they augmented, you know, by putting in all the set dressing? Like, but where in the world was a location like this in London? You know, like that's another thing.
What
like,
basement is this? I do think it's a location. I do. And I think they built around it. I don't know.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't know. But what could it be? I don't know.
But that's why this movie is so great, is because you're delighted over and over again. Okay, so then I was watching this. I was like, wait a minute. Someone used this as a Professor X. There's an X-Men movie out there where there's this like walkway. Into the
abyss. Yeah. And he can't touch anything. He's in like a glass case or something.
Yeah, it felt like that was a derivative of this. And this, like, are they shooting inside a nuclear silo?
Well,
like, what is
this? This feels like The Matrix to me.
Yeah, that's true, too.
But beautiful. I mean, I don't know what it is, but it's kind of beautiful.
Oh, yeah. It was and what's fun about this particular set is it comes at a time when you're kind of towards the end of the story, you've gone through a battle sequence. And it's like they flipped a card over and they're like, we're not done yet. The scale of this is just so huge.
Yeah, it doesn't have what this location might be. This, I showed the tub earlier, but like the griminess and everything that they gave to everyone's apartments and
there's an element too that like, certain sets in certain movies like Zhivago, you see, you know, a dirty house, a clean house, a frozen house or something like that. In this movie, you see his apartment, you see the Buttles apartment, I think, or his apartment. And then you see with it 10,000 ducks.
Yeah.
Remember, like all the things have come in because the air conditioning guys have come in and they've like basically ruined his apartment.
Yeah.
It's like they didn't just shoot it. They had to like be like, oh, okay, today we got to go redress it again.
Yeah. And then the ceiling part where they're putting in the duck, like then they come when they come to take the guy away and put him in the suit and they saw through the ceiling.
Yeah.
That's like the first scene or something, right? I don't know. I just don't. This is a fantastically, because you're also, look at how many different eras they're throwing in to the film, kind of showing like, look, we didn't tear down old buildings, but we retrofitted everything with our ducks and our, you know.
Yeah, no, it's a good lesson, too, to be like, look, see that Egyptian column with those crazy palms coming out of it? Yeah. I didn't notice that in the movie. But what's cool about you isolating it is that, like, okay, you and I are in a you know, spitball session working on a show, and you found this column, and you're like, hey, what do you think? I might be like, nah, it's not right. But at the same time, in this movie, it is right. Like, you kind of have to have these kind of wacky moments of set dressing to prove that like it can work, and like somebody shoved those flowers up in that little niche there, like God bless them.
Yeah. I mean, it filled up that's a genius part, to fill up like a room up there and give it some sort of style and something to look at, and probably,
well, and just lamps with fringe, they make that whole room look like it's like, you know, a boudoir.
And look at the right side of the frame, how they use it as a foreground blurry piece. Like, they used it. That's awesome.
Yeah, I agree. They didn't just push it out of the side. Clear out this desk. Get this all out of here.
Get this shit out of here. So, I think I would have voted for Brazil.
I would have had to, like, without a doubt. I mean, it does blow my mind that you said that Empire Strikes Back was winning. So yeah. What was going on in the early 80s with the Academy? You hear that, Academy?
It doesn't matter. Look at, I'll tell you this, 1992. It's like Unforgiven, and the winner of the year, and Chaplin, and the winner of the year was Howard's End, but also the movie Toys was nominated. Now, Toys is not a good movie, but like Brazil, it's completely designed. Like it's...
Yeah, and it's done with a stroke that... So there's completely designed, and I'll talk about this in The Color Purple, where sometimes completely designed, the designer didn't back off. And I loved Michael Riva, and he's got, you know, and then there's another designer in it, but... And Bo, obviously, too. I forgot it was Bo Welsh.
Yeah.
Like, these people are incredible designers. But there's thresholds in which you can do too much.
Yeah.
And I liked about Brazil is they did a lot, and they obviously did too much. But it never felt like it was force-feeding you. You know, that was the world that it was.
Yeah.
You know, you needed that detail to tell the story. Like, Game of Thrones, to me, is pretty excellent when it comes to that. They had to design so much, but it's not in your face.
Right.
You know?
No, and two, that is the lighting to celebrate what needs to be highlighted and not every single thing, you know, not 20 lamps on in the store.
Yeah.
Okay, now The Color Purple is a story of a Black Southern woman struggles to find her identity after suffering abuse from her father and others for over 4 decades. Production designer Michael Riva and Bo Welsh, set decorator Linda Descana, who is still my number one, I wish I could have on the podcast. never giving up, but...
Well, so for some context too, Michael Riva gave us amazing things. This same year he gave us Goonies, which is crazy that Goonies was the same year. And why Goonies wasn't nominated, because I just don't think people take sci-fi children's in the same grain of, you know, they just don't.
No.
I don't know how anyone could say that Witness was better designed than Goonies at the end of the day.
No, I don't.
And then Bo Welsh, didn't he do Beetlejuice? Or
I just want to give a shout. I mean, the Michael Riva, who, I mean, is still kicking. I mean,
no, he passed away.
Oh, he did. Oh, no, no.
Bo Welsh
is still kicking.
But yeah, Bo Welsh did the last thing that Schmigged in season one.
Michael Riva, like A Few Good Men, Congo, Hard Rain, Lethal Weapon 4, Charlie's Angels, Zathura, I'm saying that wrong, Iron Man 2, The Amazing Spider-Man. His career spanned from 76 to 2012. I mean, he had a beautiful run of films that were very inspiring to me. And then Bo Welsh.
Bo Welsh gave us a lot of things we love today, like talk about an incredible designer.
I mean, Beetlejuice 2 he's doing, right?
Oh, I don't know what he's doing now, but I just look at, you know, Beetlejuice, Ghostbusters 2, Edward Scissorhands, Batman Returns, The Birdcage. I mean, just those two alone are two opposite ends of the design spectrum. Men in Black, Wild West. We're still using Bo Welsh's train. The train from Wild Wild West is the train in The Good Place. I mean,
right.
What better design signature do you need when your train ends up on several shows?
Yeah. And then for me, like Linda, the impact that she and inspiration that she has given me, not only like Blade Runner, Fatso, which I always want to bring up. I love Fatso. Blade Runner, Goonies, Color Purple, Falcon and the Snowman, Back to School, Harry and the Hendersons, Scrooged, Rain Man, Back to the Future 2, Avalon, Defending Your Life, one of my favorites. She did Toys, Wolf, Father of the Bride 2. I mean, Patch Adams, tons.
No, I don't know, Wolf. The Rocketeer as well, which was a favorite. So these people, a round of applause for their incredible careers. Yeah. Also, this is Steven Spielberg's like first, I think not major. I mean, he definitely, this was a successful movie, but this wasn't Jaws or Jurassic Park or, you know, well, E.T. Yeah, this was a break. I think it's also important to point out that this novel and Out of Africa, also a novel, they both are sweeping stories that take place over many years, many locations, and they kind of suffer a bit because the movies have to collage so much information. Mm. And I did like this movie. I saw it, you know, back long time ago. And so this was a rewatch for me. And so this is what I was kind of saying about the difference between design and not design, like being too heavy handed. I actually think that they did a beautiful job, but it's too beautiful. I had a hard time believing that this was replicating reality. Like it felt like it was from an acting style. I mean, Whoopi Goldberg is incredible, and Oprah Winfrey, Danny Glover, they're all acting, you know, without a doubt. But, you know, you have this scene and she's Mary Poppins. By the end of the day, you kind of are led to believe in the movie. And this isn't set dressing related or production design. I think this is a director who wanted things to be a little bit more imaginary. And maybe that made it more palpable because the story is very heavy and hard to swallow. And it did make it accessible. And a lot of people went to see this movie. But like, even look at the windows, you can't see outside. She's like literally in a prison cell. And I get what they're saying. And then you come, you know, look at the transition in Mary Poppins style, you know, it's Cinderella's dress almost.
This was all shot in North Carolina and then at Universal Stage 37. It had a budget of $15 million and to date has made $98 million. It is one of my favorite movies. I can't even count how many times I've watched it. I know every word to all the songs. I think about it all the time for some reason, even more so now having kids and thinking that her kids were taken away. I think about it. I love this movie, and I feel like the inspiration that I got from this movie is that it's this house that is the other character of, as you said, like it's her prison, but she makes it a home. And how you grow with your home and the kids get bigger. And it also showed, like, you know, not, you know, the South that we kind of, you know, pigeonhole into what it was too, of like slavery and all this too. It's in a time where this is a different generation that I don't think there's a lot of film history about. And I feel like this is such a great example of this time in history in the South.
It does paint it idyllic. I will say that you constantly almost in some form of a dream in this movie. Like if you look at this is the perfect example. Look at how tall that window is and look at the godlight that's coming down when she gets letters from Nettie. And like, this is so hyper theatrical, and this is where Steven Spielberg, to me, like, you know, stretches his wings out, and he's like, look, I'm telling a story, I'm not replicating reality always, and I enjoy that. But if you're looking for a textbook, if you're going into this movie like watching Lincoln, you know, that's a representation of history. This is a storytelling. Like even the bed is cockeyed. You know, they didn't shove it in the corner. You get wrapped in the romance of all of it. The top of the stairs that this room is connected to is massive. I don't think you have a picture of it, but you could have a whole other room at the top.
When she's the tray, when she comes in with the tray to give her, it is a very weird, but I think that like when we were looking at houses 2 years ago, like hallways sometimes are really wide and weird. And I don't know why.
I'm sure it's believable, but like, there's this sense of like romance to it all that comes through, and the design is supporting all that. A perfect example, and I don't think you have a picture of it, but the very first time I think you see Harpo fixing his house, he's got like, there's holes in the roof and there's all these multicolored pieces of tin, and he ends up falling through the roof. Like that's a cartoon for a second. And then Harpo falls through the roof twice after that. So like, there's this almost like slapstick moment that's constantly kind of going, hey, we're having fun here, even though this movie has some heavy topics going on.
I think too, as a period piece and looking at textures and curtains and like and the I always love when films use mirrors and seeing reaction shots or seeing something you're not supposed to see or sneaking a peek at something through a mirror is always fantastic.
Yeah, it was a good reminder to me to kind of keep saying the same thing I'm saying, is to step back and not treat things as historically accurate,
yeah,
as treat them as a storytelling. And this movie kind of retaught me that, to be like, it's like if I probably watched Forrest Gump now, I'd remember it's right. A story. You know, it's not giving us a window into an actual textbook. Danny Glover's performance was amazing.
He's fantastic.
I really liked him. And I kind of was like, where did he go? Like after, you know, he had this and he's also in Witness.
Yeah, well, Lethal Weapon.
The last thing I remember him is in, what was the Mel Brooks movie where they were cops together?
Well, Lethal Weapon. I don't know.
Yeah, Lethal Weapon. But it's just kind of like, did he fade or am I just not seeing him?
He's in Lethal Weapon and he's saying, I'm too old for this shit. He's like 40 years old.
Yeah, that's
right. Ridiculous. Yeah, I put this still up because I love that in the home, and you could see in the dining room scene too, like the wallpaper and the drapery, like they had, oh, there's the hallway. They had money. Like
you could park your car at the top of that staircase.
I would hate that. As a decorator, I'd be like, what am I putting here? And what they didn't ask her to do is put a rug, which I appreciate because that's usually the, like, well, let's put a rug there so we have a sense of space or whatever. I love the sense of shadows that they use and the lighting and all the fixtures that they have. And then
it's a big story in a small town too. Cause like, this is perfect. Look at how idyllic that is. And this is just down the street from Harpo's Jazz Club and just down the street from the church. And, you know, Danny Glover's walking his horse at the end of the movie where, Cecil has her own house. Like they're all close by. And I actually liked that. So it's a big story in a small town and you get that from the design, or I did anyways.
There's her house, right?
Oh, yeah, the snow was not good.
No.
You know, they tried, but look at the green trees all around and the snow. Like,
it is. Maybe, I know. Now, maybe. I mean, they would have CG'd that, but like, yeah, it is. Even there, look at the trees.
Yeah, the magnolia leaves right in our face. Yeah, I wish they would have. I also was like, does it snow in this part of the country? Like, that's what I
could
kept
never.
Thinking.
This is what I have this still up because I could never understand that that's the front of the house, but that's the back of the house. I could never understand the relationship, like when they come up the drive in the car or they're leaving it, like that this is the front of the house. Never made sense to me.
Oh, you're right. Maybe they did use two houses or something, because I don't know. I agree with you. I didn't catch that till now you're showing it, but what I did notice is like the flowers in the flower box.
Yeah.
Like those are the kinds of things that I was like, wow, they really were pushing this to make it beautiful.
Mm.
When I don't, would it have been that beautiful? I don't know. I mean, maybe we're trying to see the world through Cecil?
Well, I mean, what else did she have to do? Plant some flowers.
I mean, she had a lot. She had all those kids.
She had all the chickens and everything. But I don't know. People didn't have TV back then. I think people planted flowers. I think that's somewhat believable. No.
But Whoopi Goldberg makes you love this movie so much. Oh, that actress, too. I actually forget who that is.
Shug Avery.
Shug was so good. Really interesting.
Margaret Avery is the actress. I love all of this. I love the character of it. And, like, it's not like some jazz. It's on the water. Like, it's crazy space anyway. And then they jam all these people into it. And
The fact that you have people's feet hanging down, like they're up above, and you do go up there, the camera goes up there. And then you actually, somebody falls in the water. Like the use of this space was really well done. And I was wondering what was the New Orleans cartoon, The Princess and the Frog?
There was
elements of that movie that kind of somehow connected me to this movie. I don't know why. It was just like, I had visions of that movie in this scene. Wondered if they used it as inspiration or something.
And then they age it, you know, like they age everything in this movie. and it gets a little sadder, and the blues start to come in at the end of the movie. Everything's a little colder and blue, and it's not as warm as the beginning of the movie.
Things are crooked.
Yeah. And it's, I don't know. It's funny because your take on it of like trying to make it this, which I think you're right. They're trying to make it into this like kind of nice wrapped up little world. I've always felt this to be such a sad movie. And so
it's a very sad movie, especially if you shut it off before the last 15 minutes.
Yeah.
But yeah. You get all the way to the end. It's like almost everything. Like I actually had to pause it and go back at one point. Cause I was like, wait a minute. So it wasn't her dad. That all happens in like one sentence. Whoopi Goldberg's character is like, oh, it didn't end up being my dad to begin with at the beginning. It was like, what? Like, that's a pretty big reveal.
Yeah. I don't know. I love this movie. And I mean, look at the cars all dirty and like the signage back there and this little town that they've made. I have that slide in the beginning, but that general store. I love it.
Yeah, the general store is very idyllic. The bottom left is very idyllic. And the church when they go in and how beautiful the choir is organized, like all that.
All that, the hooks to hang your hats and just tiny, tiny details in this plain space. And then I love at the end how they give her a little color. Look at the artwork that they chose for Celie's store when she finally gets like her freedom. It's like,
well, but she's also inheriting what would have been her real parents' store too. So like this, to me, that's what I liked about the set, that it's going to be hers, but she did inherit it from her real dad and her real mom. Right. Isn't that how that
I never worked? Is the mom even in it? She's only in the beginning, right?
Well, she finds out when she gets the house
that
who she thought was her dad was not her real dad, and her real dad owned this sew shop.
Oh, right, right.
And her dad died first, so her mom had it, and then when her mom died, I think.
Yes.
And that's when I had to go back and rewatch it, because I was like, wow, that happened really quick.
Oh, no, you're right. Because the whole thing of her thinking that she had her father's kids, too, is the real
I know, and that was horrible. And like she had lived her whole life that way. And then Danny Glover's, whatever his character's name was, keeping the letters. Like she had so much hardship. Oh, right. And then there's the whole
And then they're Africa. In Africa. I mean, yeah. You know, which I'm assuming they did on location in Carolina or something, because it doesn't seem like they went to Africa.
Oh, no, I think I read that they had a Kenya unit, that there was a unit that went to Kenya.
Oh, yes, it does say Kenya. Yes, you are right.
I think they went, and like, you know, that part's really great too. Again, these undertaking of these giant stories, you know, I haven't worked on something of this scale, but I would think that there's a point in which you know, once you make the set list, you have to sit back and you just have to be like, okay, here we go. You know, we're going for it.
You have to just take it one at a time, because the set list is too overwhelming.
Yeah, you got to bite it off in small pieces.
I love the scenes of them together and the ending scene when the sunset and everything.
Another thing I want to point out too that I found fascinating is that this is not related to production design, that Steven Spielberg, you know, doesn't work without John Williams typically, but Quincy Jones did the music in this movie. And I think Quincy Jones was the person who brought Steven Spielberg to the project. But it's gonna, as somebody who's a music lover out there, there is a theme that happens often. It's when it's Nessie and Cece, right? Those two are the main characters. Whenever they get together, specifically when Cece gets the letters and finds them, that is very, very close to the John Williams theme from Jurassic Park. It's very, very close. And I found it interesting because this predates Jurassic Park. So it would have been Quincy Jones's theme or someone's theme. Because there was an argument about who should win the Oscar for best music because a bunch of people, I think, did music for it. Anyway, I'm going down a trail here. But I thought it was interesting that there was a theme in this movie that we all know that becomes a Jurassic Park theme. So I encourage you to watch the movie and keep your ear out for that.
I could hum it right now, but I won't.
The last thing I want to point out there is that Whoopi Goldberg auditioned for this movie with two people in the room that would have made me crazy to like nervous. First of all, one was Steven Spielberg, and the other one, did you read who it was?
No. Did I
miss? Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson was in the room when she auditioned for this movie.
Why was he in the room?
I think he's friends with Quincy Jones. That's the only thing I could think of. Like, I don't know why he would have been there. But he, you know, if you read online, I have no reason not to believe online, of course, right? Everything is real. But I was like, wow, that would
MJ,
make me so...
MJ and Spielberg in the room, and you're like a no-name actor. That
she was a stand-up comedian. All of that's great. Anyway, she deserved all the winning she did. So great job, everybody.
I am super bummed that they have remade this movie. That's the last thing I could
I will say that it's a musical. I don't know if that's going to make it different enough. I did, you know, the trailer makes it look like it's big and sweeping, and it, like, there's this whole like stage number in it. I'll be interested to see how they handle it.
Well, I'm not going to watch it. No, I will. Here is the winner of 1985 with Out of Africa. In 20th century colonial Kenya, a Danish baroness has a passionate love affair with a free-spirited big game hunter. And by the way, the big game hunter was 48 and she was 35 in this movie.
But is that in real life or is that in the story?
In real life.
Because, like, that happens because I think Robert Redford did Horse Whisperer, too, and there was a giant age difference. I mean, I'm in a, what do they call it, April-December relationship. Brian and I have a large age. So, like, that's, you know, something that's on my mind. But it is amazing to me when I see that on film and I'm always like, oh, he's too old.
But he he actually doesn't seem too old. But it's weird, but he is kind of too old for her, but I guess you're in Africa. What are you going to do? Production designer Stephen Grimes and set decorator Josie McAvin. Congrats on your Oscar. It is a fantastic looking film. It's not a fantastic looking film. I mean, you're in Africa and they had to do period in Africa. Which I think a lot of it's there. I've been to Africa.
I mean, it's not that it's not deserved. It's definitely a beautiful movie, especially when you show the, like, inside her house. And that house was his house, then her house, and then empty. You see the coffee factory get burned down. Like, there's a lot of things about it. But truthfully, at the end of the day, it's the country or the continent of Africa and the country of Kenya that wins, because it's the scenery, it's the vista. There's a lot of camping that happens in this movie that isn't in the room right here. So, like, you kind of have to hand it to the scenery. You know, there's that flying sequence where they go to Tsavo and the flamingos all fly.
Yeah.
I mean, all of that's beautiful. And I could see how if your vision of Africa as a continent, you know, America does a pretty bad job of teaching what that is. As a kid. And so if you're, you know, seeing Africa for the first time in this movie, of course you're going to be like, wow, you know, it's a beautiful place. It's green, it's rich. So I liked seeing all that. We saw a very beautiful, tiny slice of the continent of Africa, and it won the Oscar, in my opinion.
It's also the cinematographer, David Watkins, also won for this, and I think well-deserved.
I mean, that's what does make the scenery look so beautiful is the way that there's so many composition. I had a hard time buying that they were in love, which you learn later in the movie why that is true. So I thought that was really well done, which I know is not scenery related. But what I'm getting at is that, like, as a designer, if I were coming to this, I might try to do a little bit more fish out of water design. Because she always looks at home there, and she's, first of all, in the 80s, she's a strong woman. She's not fawning over him. But she's not like a damsel in distress. She's very communicative about her emotions.
But she comes there with, like, okay, I'm going to set up house, and she has to, like, you know, make the house for herself. I love the, like, before and after of it all. And then even, like, the after when she has to move out.
And how sad it is that she has to sell her cuckoo clock.
But the color tones, too, of this and a bouncing off of Africa is great because they're all muted. Nothing really pops. Even the tents, or the nothing, even the red, like that dinner scene, like even that red in the back is muted. Like everything's toned down in the film, which I wonder why, because I feel like you would want Africa to pop more, or the greenery or something. And her bedroom is this, like, you know.
Well, yeah, you're right. It is all tone on tone. I mean, you do see the Maasai Mara in red at one point, and that was as red as they were going to get. I do want to point out two scenes that would have pulled this out of the running for an Oscar nomination, in my opinion, as somebody from 2023 looking back. There are two scenes with green screen. One happens at the beginning where she's talking to her future husband, and the other is the flying, and they're absolutely, they look so dated.
Yeah,
there's something about them that completely removes you, and it had to have removed people in 1985 in my opinion too, because it's distracting.
The flying scenes are really bad, but it is directed by Sidney Pollack, who was one of my favorites, who directed The Firm, Tootsie, Absence of Malice, The Way We Were, The Slender Thread.
Yeah, The Slender Thread is great. I love that.
So I do love his work. I do love elements of this movie. I love looking at the colonialism design too. All these, like, you know, having a lemonade out on the front there, and the wicker that they used, or like all of the silver and everything that they had then. And
I agree. I mean, there's like that shot right there. If she would turn around, she looked like she'd be in Better Homes and Gardens.
Yeah.
Like, it's positioned well. It's beautiful. They got beautiful vegetables. They got beautiful everything. I mean, there's this one scene where they're in a, you know, out in the middle of their journey, and they're having a wine and dinner and at their campsite, and there's a little coffee cup with flowers in it. They never missed a beat.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the dressing at that picnic. It's like, where did that come from?
It's Ralph Lauren. It's like, yeah. But ooh, I think Ralph Lauren had that, right? I think they had.
No, I agree that they did. I just found that they really went for it. Again, this is another study in scale. I mean, look at that. That's ridiculous. There's a scene too that happens towards the end of the movie where they're in a situation like that on the top of a hill, and it's the last scene that you see of her in Africa. It's her, you know, with this giant tree next to her, and it's just spectacularly shot.
Building all of these little huts and the farm, and building all of this, the coffee, and all of this, I think, is a build, right? I mean,
I think so. I mean, they definitely went to a real place, from what I read. I just don't know what was real and what was not real. Like, obviously, they had to burn some stuff down.
The fires.
I mean, the scale of it is just spectacular, and that part is, you know, so well earned for the design team and the art department, everybody around. Because it was I think they shot the whole thing. Oh, is that the one with the coffee cup on it? No, that one doesn't have the coffee cup. But I was like, all the touches that they did. And now I think that whole community was, I think they built that community.
They built that town?
I think so. I read that they found an abandoned set of railroad tracks, and they did the train sequence on that, and then they built a little colonial town.
Well, that's crazy. Building the whole town. I mean, well, it does look, well, no. I don't know. I thought that was there.
I never noticed this. There's the power lines in it. That's a well-placed power line, because in the course of the movie, you go from horse and buggy to car to plane. Yeah. And you do get electricity, like that happens over the time, you know, there's some time telling going on.
I love all the silver and like the wicker and like, I don't know. I mean, the dressing.
Yeah, the wicker was great. All of that. I actually thought you'd be into the drapery in this movie, because I know you love drapery.
Oh, I didn't even, I felt it drab, I think.
There's the curtains in her house, there's always lacy stuff everywhere. I mean, it is Victorian time. I feel like I can remember curtains going, oh, I think Kim will like this.
There was a lot of fire, like everything burns down at one point, and you're like, oh man, you gotta start from it. It's a sad moment. All her work is gone. But that's a lot of production right there, to set all that on fire.
Yeah, and they really let it burn, and you actually see them reacting to the fire in the same shot. Now, that could be a special effect or not CGI at the time. How I don't know how they did it, but it was very well done because you see Meryl Streep's character reacting to the her life's over. And you know what was awesome about Meryl Streep is she didn't get devastated. She was a strong woman. Even in that moment, she just kind of reacted to the fact that it's over. It's done.
Yeah. I don't,
Okay, so there was another thing. Oh, this is a great example. So this one, and then there's a scene with a polo. This scene was very quick. All she was doing was going to talk to somebody about, you know, look at that set. I mean, it's big. And then there's a scene in a, where she decides to break it off with her husband, Dennis. And there's a huge polo scene just for that scene. And it was like, man, I'm so glad they did it. They went for these big things. Yeah. You'd be like, let's just have them sit at a bench in a park, you know?
Yeah, it's a big event. It's a big damn event with tents and everything. It's a huge event.
Yeah, so I love the producers or Sydney or whoever was like, yeah, let's make it big and let's not smash the vision because it's a big story.
Even this scene is pretty like poignant to the story too. And I love the detail of this, like the there's a safe in the wall, which looks, you know, I don't know why the doctor has a safe in the wall. Is it a doctor?
Oh, I thought I think this is the banker when
Like, oh, it is the banker.
We're going to give you one more shot. And she's like, I'll take it or kind of thing.
And
I don't know.
Bars on the windows and three oddly placed trophies in the back. Yeah. But there's a lot of trophies. I don't know what the deal is. Like when I have been lucky enough to go to Africa and there is like all of a sudden in the hotel room, there's just a case of trophies. Like they're really into trophies over there or something. But there's a shot down there of the clouds and they're in the clouds and yeah. And I thought
that was weird.
Party scene and they had a lot of extras in this film.
They sure did. And also hats off to the hats in this movie. There's like end in hats and the hats are all great.
And here's like one of the final scenes and it's expansive. It's beautiful. And it's
one moment that I was pulled out of the movie and I only bring it up because I like point of view. Like point of view is very enjoyable to me. Like how am I seeing the story? And in this movie, Out of Africa, all about her. And there was one scene, I think only one scene in the whole movie where you aren't with her. And it's when Robert Redford's character goes to visit, I guess it's Dennis's brother, whoever's dying of Blackwater fever. And it's the only time we're not with her. And I don't know why. I just am bringing it up to be like, why did that get in there? There was another scene where the dam is broken and she just says, let the water go through. Like those two scenes actually have nothing to do with the plot. And I mean, it's already a long movie. I just wonder if they were like paying some homage to the novel or something. Like, why did those two things happen?
Well, I wonder too, to try to get more scenes for Redford to be nominated, maybe.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, because he had to deal.
He wasn't even nominated. Never mind.
But I mean, that's true. They could have like wanted to get him nominated.
Yeah.
And then the last thing we have got to talk about, what were your feelings about her accent?
It's awful. I mean, it's awful in a sense of like it just it wasn't strong enough for me to make me think that, and I felt like that, and then it was like she lost it, or I just couldn't take it seriously.
Same thing, I couldn't take it seriously. There were times when I was like, oh, she's got it this scene, and I love Meryl Streep; she can almost do no wrong. But like this, the accent really did. I read that she. Rumor was that she wasn't sexy enough for this role, so she met with the director and she wore like a low-cut top to like prove that she had the sexual, you know, whatever to get this role. But I was like, man, they should have looked at somebody who could speak German.
Well, I certainly don't think they made her sexy with the hair and the
she looks pretty sexy when Robert Redford washes her hair.
Well, the washing of the hair scene is like
but that's silly too. That was like, okay, so what are we doing?
Uncomfortable. And all I kept thinking was, what a beautiful location to scout and like be a part. Okay, this is where we're going to do the hair washing scene. And how like kind of humiliating it must have been for Meryl Streep. How many takes did you have to do where Robert Redford is washing your hair? Like it's, I get taken out of it of like, ooh, that must have been uncomfortable to shoot, or like, ooh, what was, why did we have to have this scene? Like, he loves her so much, he's washing her hair. I mean, I get it, but it'd be sexier in a tub back at the house.
Yeah, no, you're right. I don't disagree with all those things, because the way that Meryl played that scene was like, oh, this is the most amazing thing. She already loved him anyway. You know, we knew that from the like second scene.
Yeah.
So anyway, great job. But I will say it's not the best. It didn't win the Oscar for me, but it's a beautiful movie.
Yes, it didn't get my vote. Now, here we go. Ran, which is a medieval Japan. An elderly warlord retires, handing over his empire to his three sons. However, he vastly underestimates how the newfound power will corrupt them and cause them to turn on each other and him. Production designer Yoshirimo Maruke and Shinobu Maruke.
I would be curious to know if they were related. I mean, maybe that's my not knowing.
I thought it was father and son. I have already watched in 1980 their picture, Kegmusha, I watched. And I have to say, I think they used some of the same locations.
Oh, they did. Okay.
I don't know. I think it all sort of ran together. Like, once I started watching this, I was like, oh. This is okay. It is the same. It's the same.
Interesting. I really loved this movie. I liked it because I liked seeing this world. First of all, that was my favorite part. It was very straightforward storytelling. It felt like ancient storytelling.
Yeah.
Not just in the story of the direction, the story or the direction, but in the scenery as well. And, you know, in a world of Game of Thrones and Lord of the Rings, like this, like it didn't overdo itself. Again, it had an excessive quality, but there was somehow restraint, like that bottom right bottom picture there. Like, it's a very simple structure, you know, like our instinct now is to put stuff on stuff on stuff and gild things and, you know, potentially and hang, you know, torches from stuff. But I just really enjoyed the whole thing. I thought all of it was believable.
The simplicity of Japanese architecture plays a huge part in all of the sets. And in the same with the previous film, the sets are basically the background, mostly for the color of their wardrobe, I found.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And so you have a lot of, like, you have the wood, the wood or the white, or the stone, and it's really there, and I think it's just the teamwork of it and their culture that then you play off of that of what can I'm sure there were huge discussions of like the wardrobe against the sets and how it's going to play off of it, because the sets are so simple, really. I mean,
there's a world where that feels like it's almost illustrated, like a storybook or a fable. Like the background of the scenery is the background and the people are popping away from it. And that, I think, is what, whether that was intentional or not, that's one of the things I liked about this.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, the scale there is crazy. And how they shot these two opposing scenes, you know, him inside the temple and him outside. Like, how did they do that?
I don't know.
Really is spectacular.
I really don't know how they did that. It is a spectacular scene. And then in having that and having the elements of all extras and fire and smoke and like the storytelling still in there, like, it's really good.
This is a perfect moment to pause and say hats off to the prop person.
Yes.
People.
Yes. Like, yes.
There's 10,000 flags in this movie and they're all beautiful, every single one of them.
Yeah. A lot of weapons.
Yeah.
But even, you know, I think it is just the culture of it where the sets take a step back, but are impressive. like this. I mean, yeah, this is so impressive. I mean,
look at the ceiling of that space. Now, whether that's real or scenery, like all those beams are doing something different. Like they are of a tree, which I really enjoyed. And that kind of happens throughout the movie. You see that now. That could be Japanese architecture or the movie itself. And I just enjoyed seeing this world. And here we are looking, you know, out of Africa, about Africa. We're looking at, you know, Louisiana or wherever Color Purple was set. You know, these are all three of these. Well, and we also have Witness to talk about. They're showing you snippets of worlds, but this one is the most out of my world, which is what I liked.
Yeah. This is a $11.5 million budget. And
sorry, Shinobu is a woman, so they weren't brothers. Oh, so I just don't know if they were related at all, but I just wanted to point that out. Japanese production designer and art director. She was married. They were husband and wife.
Because he is, well, I mean, he had an amazing career also of credits.
This scene on the top left, which is basically a big portion of the beginning of the movie, I really liked, and it's a good lesson in like, hey, we don't always have to cover our actors, because some, you know, so many times a director of photography or a production will be like, we need to tent it or we need to do something to keep the light off the actor. They were outside a lot.
Yeah, majority of the movie, they're outside.
Yeah, and they're not covered up. And I thought it was a good lesson. I also really loved how simple the color story was. Like, I actually got lost a few times, but knowing that, you know, they were always going to help me out with the flags and the colors between yellow. Yeah.
Who's who? Red. Oh, wait, they're red. The red guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. The makeup is laughable sometimes, though.
I think they were obviously going for like a throw into like kabuki or some other kind of Japanese storytelling, because it does remove you. But I was so bought into it. Something about the movie cunningly brought me into it, and I didn't care. You know, just like I said, you know, I was harping on green screen and Out of Africa. The makeup could definitely pull you out of all of it.
Right. I think too, it's funny, not funny to me. Did this win Best Foreign Film? Like, how did this get nominated? Like,
I was kind of thinking that way too. Like, how do certain movies get themselves into a position for an Oscar? Like, this is not the only Japanese movie, and this was probably not the only epic movie from a foreign country, but I guess somebody has to submit it.
This wasn't even nominated for foreign language.
Huh.
I think that having them maybe previously nominated and this guy's super long career. I mean, he started in 1948. He has he was nominated for 4 Oscars and has another 9 wins and 3 nominations for the Japanese Academy awards. I mean, maybe it was like an underground thing and people knew about it, and then like, they're like, oh, we got to vote for that. I don't know.
Well, I think the director's background and success and other things helped.
Yeah.
I just looked it up because I was curious. It was $11 million budget, which was Japanese's most expensive. They spent 10 years storyboarding this film. Oof. Incredible. He really wanted to make this movie.
This, I thought, was a beautiful setting for this. You know, like, it's dark. It's finally dark, and they're light, which contrasted kind of a lot of the movie.
And I agree. I actually really liked her lot. The sister in law.
Yeah, she was really good. So I could see why this would be a contender, but I don't know.
Yeah, I definitely see why it was a contender given what it was. But I go back to, and I know I sound like I'm a Goonies fan because I am. I go back to why that movie wouldn't be in the same realm. And it goes, like, I get caught up in that because I look at, you know, some of the other things that were nominated or that were made that year. Cocoon, I can see why not, but Legend was incredible. Weird Science. Yeah. Like, these are movies that had really interesting design to them.
Yeah, Legend, I think. And even, like, Young Sherlock Holmes, that was a really good period piece. Design-wise, it's not a, I mean, yeah, story.
It does go down to a movie's PR. You know, we're going to see a lot of Barbie and a lot of Oppenheimer, not just because they're great movies, but because they are PR'd well.
It's true. It's true, true, true. How much are they going to spend on their Oscar campaign? And I don't, but that wasn't really a thing then. That only came in really in the mid-90s and like the Weinsteins and everything. It wasn't as big of a game as it was until like mid to late 90s. Because I just read the book Oscar Wars and I read all about it. So, all right, the last film, Witness, is while protecting a young Amish boy who is the sole witness to a brutal murder and his mother, a detective is forced to seek refuge within their community when his own life is threatened. Production designer Stan Jolly and set decorator John Anderson. I will give a little bit of my own history. My mom and my grandmom actually took me down to 30th Street Station to see, we'll get to it. They took me down to 30th Street Station when they were filming this, and I saw Harrison Ford when I was like seven.
Was he as dreamy then as he is in the movie?
I just knew it was Han Solo. That's all I knew. Because I don't know if I had, I mean, I probably had seen Raiders or knew of Raiders, but I just knew it was Han Solo and it was crazy. And we stood outside and they had the big, you know, the big massive like picture lights shining into the windows, which now I'm, after watching this, I'm like, oh, they were making it daylight in there because they shot it. It was so late at night. It was so late. And I think my dad and my grandfather were like so pissed because they took us down to 30th Street Station, which is not a good area in Philly at the time. To see a movie being made. So
I love that this movie came to you in this again. This is twice in my life this movie's come to you. I love that.
It's crazy. And also my grandfather used to take us on Sunday drives up to Lancaster, and you knew we were close when you smelled horseshit.
The
window. We would go and look at the Amish people. I don't know. Have a good
breakfast. The bottom left shot, I was really excited when I looked through your slideshow to see that you had it in it, because to me that is the definitive shot of this whole movie.
The Dairy Queen.
The Dairy Queen, the gas prices, the buggy, the traffic, like the two opposing forces are, you know, I don't think the Amish would have the orange triangle and their lights on it if they didn't have to by this, you know, the government. You know. So I just really like that, you know, this movie's theme is like, we're coming for you, essentially. And the designer and the set decorator nailed it by being authentic. So I can see why it was Oscar nominated if I isolate the other choices and say it was a very well done movie and it never was cartoonized. It was never theatrical. It was very accessible and it felt very realistic. Now, did they Hollywoodize being Amish for this movie? I don't know, but it felt very authentic to me. And we've talked about this in other sessions where, like, I think it was in Foxes of Harrow where you assume they're telling you the truth because it's so well done.
Right.
That's how.
Well, I know that no real Amish people were in the movie because they don't like photography or anything like that, which is a couple parts of this movie. So none of these people are Amish, but the Amish were helping, you know, make it. So I am assuming that the designer and decorator got to talk to some Amish people and go into Amish homes. I mean, they filmed it in Lancaster, and I'm assuming this is someone's house. I don't think they built this house to me.
I think you're right. I think it was all in location. Like,
yeah.
But I mean, even if it wasn't, the scenic work on like even having all the smoke stains and all the lanterns and stuff give you a sense of time and care in this movie. So you have this dinner scene and you had the one in Color Purple. And I like dinner scenes because I always like seeing the props on the table and the story of like, are you going to choose as a director to be at the beginning of the meal or the end of the meal or in the middle? Because there's always a continuity issue in the middle. But like, I like that they didn't fill the milk jug all the way up because it's real dairy milk. Like they were paying attention. Somebody was paying attention. That's how I looked at the
movie. Yeah, that's a good detail. I know. I always love to see, you know, where the dinnerware and the silverware and like, you know, the coffee cups might not match or things like that. That those are details that we're really thinking of like they would have a full set or no, they are eclectic or no, they've, you know, just got mugs over time or.
And also having people on set just let things be.
Yeah.
Like when things fall or when things aren't quite clean enough or, you know, the one of the things I hate the most is when people jump into bed, it's been freshly made. Like not everybody makes their bed every day or when they go into a hospital and the bed is like tucked in. Like that's not how people look. This movie was the anti that. And I like that generally, even though things look nice, they kind of let things be. And so I would say that the location department and the on-set dresser are some of the real winners in this one.
Because I do think there's such pride in the Amish community of like perfection, but it is a lived-in space. You know, it's like that towel is a little dingy hanging above that sink or because it's being used. But, you know, the blinds are everything's supposed to be at the same height or, you know, there is... They have a lot of pride in their community about things, but you know, it's very lived in. This set's very lived in but I think it is a real house, so I don't know. I don't see why this was nominated. I just don't.
I agree with you. I think Harrison Ford's, you know, cuteness is a big factor. I think the seriousness of it, again, going back to what I was saying earlier, that drama seems to register with people as award-winning, where comedy or kids' movies or science fiction doesn't seem to do that. And I don't know why that is. You know, like Dune was nominated for Best Picture, I think, last year or the year before. And I was happy to see that because it's a great movie. But I think people discredit it as like not being, you know, serious. I mean, Star Wars helps because not Star Wars, sorry, Star Trek, because it actually has real drama in it. But I think that's why I think this movie, because it's dramatic and we're supposed to feel something, is somehow treated in its own category versus some of the other things that are, maybe I'm wrong. I just think when people think about voting.
I do love the green. The muted tones and the green shades and the green in there.
There was a really big pop that happens when they go to the barn raising. All the women have these brightly colored dresses on. And I really liked that because I want to believe that any religion, even if it's utilitarian or conservative, they can still have fun. Like look at that colored dress right there and the purple behind.
Yeah. They get a little fun on the weekends.
Yeah, especially when you're serving delicious pie, like might as well have a great dress on. I really actually liked, I don't remember the actress who played the love interest, but I thought she played it very well because...
Kelly McGillis?
Yeah, she played it so restrained and careful and measured. And I didn't like it always at the time because I felt like she was being too icy. But her performance led me to thinking about this movie a lot more after.
I just think of Top Gun.
Think of Top Gun at all.
I think she is good in this, and I love Lucas Haas. I think he's fantastic in this as a little boy. I think it's they said that something about shooting the director had said when shooting the Peter Weir shooting the murder scene, it was like the most like absurd murder scene he's ever shot. And when they slit the guy's throat, it is kind of terrifying. Like this little kid is like in the bathroom hiding from these murderers. It is crazy. And then he drops his hat and he goes back to get his hat, which is an homage to Raiders of the Lost Ark, apparently.
Oh, I didn't know that, but I will say Well, two things. One, I had never saw this movie before, so I didn't know if the kid was going to be safe or not. And I was like, oh my gosh, here goes another movie that Kim's going to have to watch. Happen to a little kid.
Kids dying.
Why are terrible things always happening to little kids in movies? Can't come up with another pun. And then you had mentioned earlier, like, so I wrote all my notes down as I watched the movies, and my last note here is it's not special. So if you're award winning and you're or Oscar nominated, I would be curious to know what made this movie so up above the rest. Outside of cinematography and directing, because I do think the direction overall is good, with the exception of the fact that, like, the three villains turn into, like, the Three Stooges at the end of the movie. They're very careful cops who've got themselves into some really great situations, and then they're all, like, running around firing their guns off, and that part was stupid to me.
Well, maybe for me, because I've seen it probably three times in my life. This might be the fourth. But I haven't seen it in a while. It doesn't seem special to me, this movie. Like, there's nothing... when someone says Witness, I say, oh, good movie. But there's nothing like, oh, the design of that movie. Wow. Like, it doesn't pop... This is a location. The Amish's, like, house is a location. Like, I just don't... I don't know.
I think Anne of Green Gables came out the same year, and I would say they're the same. Anne of Green Gables also did a great job doing what it's doing, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it's not nominated. I want to be clear on that. Like, if it does something really well, it can still be nominated. But given it's the other options out there, I'm not sure why this one did it so much better than others.
So 8-year-old little me is outside those doors.
I think that's so cool.
Watching the scene. Well, there was an actual scene where Harrison Ford comes out of those doors, but it's not in the movie.
Oh, okay.
So that also was, maybe that, you know, these things trigger you when you're little. Maybe that's what made me want to be, you know, in the movies.
But, it could be. You never know.
Yeah.
Mine came from seeing the musical, The Who's Tommy. That was really when I was like, wow, I want to be a part of that.
See? This, I think, is a build. I think they built
it. I think you're right, because of the way they had to, like, orchestrate and shoot the doors opening on the bathroom. I think, and plus it was... you know, probably difficult to shoot in the real bathrooms, I'm guessing.
I loved her house. Her, like, row house is, like, so Philly. The vernacular of, like, the you know, her house that we only see for, like, a minute. Look, it's a mess. Look at all the shit by their feet.
Yeah, I love that. I really like that.
But yeah.
Well, and the fact that they did something so opposite of where they were headed.
Yeah.
This seemed so dumb to me. I'm like, who's going to let a little kid run around and talk to a prisoner, essentially, who's handcuffed? Yeah. Like, that was weird.
Well, they had to get him over to the trophy case somehow. That's why.
Yeah, but he could also have been sitting right across from it.
Yeah. And then the upper crust of the policeman's home, I love the 70s leather. I think he's got, like, wartime caps back there. Like, are they, like, Nazi hat, like World War II hats or something?
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I didn't even notice that. I did notice the butterfly, because I remember that being part of my childhood, seeing that in people's houses, or wheat, brass wheat was popular.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, that image is a postcard image of a period in time that we no longer live in, and that's what I like it about it.
I like that there's, like, two coffee tables. Why do you have a red carpet? I don't know. I don't know if that was a location or not. I don't know.
It felt like it.
Yeah.
Because you see outside later.
Yeah.
Because you know that house when he calls him. Yeah, I think that was
These are locations, I do believe. And then it is amazing watching them build a barn. Everybody's into it. But how many barns can you have? You know, this doesn't happen every day.
Right.
He was lucky to be there when this was happening. It put him to work. And he was a carpenter anyway.
Yeah, no, he was. Rumor has it he was discovered repairing the door jam at Paramount Studio.
Yeah, he was a carpenter. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it's a good movie. I don't think of it for its design. That's all I would say. I
wouldn't say it didn't inspire me, but the design itself got the job done, and maybe that's what
I think. What the bottom line you and I are trying to say is, we wish Goonies was nominated
or Cocoon. Although I need to rewatch it, I haven't I haven't seen that in a long time, but that movie left a mark. So I'm guessing it has something to offer. Like before I watched any of these movies, the only movie I had saw was The Color Purple. And I can remember it and I can remember the design of it. I kind of had that house in my mind. And to me, those are merit badges of successful design. When you can look back on a movie you saw 20 or 30 years ago and you remember a thing about it that isn't an actor or a line or a love interest, you know, it's like, oh yeah, I remember that house.
Wait, I got to pick up my jaw. You never saw Brazil?
I hadn't seen Brazil, no.
Wow. Well, I'm glad. No. I'm glad you got to see it for this. The Brazil is weird.
Yeah, my two favorites out of this was Brazil and Ran, actually. I got very hooked on Ran. I was telling everybody about it right after I saw it. I was like, wow, I was totally swept up in that movie. And the last time we met, I'm still talking about Hindenburg. And
Hindenburg.
Was like,
yeah.
You know, 5 months ago or 4 months ago.
Yeah, I'm still talking about Hindenburg. You want to, I mean, there's been at least one or two of every year that is like, wow, that was great. Now, but since, you know, this in 92, even 80, where I had already seen most of the films, it does get to like, the rewatch, as we were saying, is much better because you're watching it on a design eye instead of like, oh yeah, I saw that movie, I don't need to see it again. But when you watch, like when I'm watching again Color Purple, even though I love it, I am really looking at these design details. What did it made it so great that it was nominated? What made Witness so great? I don't know.
Yeah, but that happened to us in like The Odd Couple. I don't know why it was nominated. No, sorry, not The Odd Couple. Sorry, Sunshine Boys.
Sunshine Boys, yeah.
And then I remember Shampoo.
No clue.
It's not that they're not good movies. It's just that, you know, it has everything to do with what's nominated. Sorry, what's out at that time and the politics behind it. I liked Shampoo, not to go back to that, but because it showed a beautiful side of L.A.
Yeah.
Just like Out of Africa showed a beautiful part of Africa. That's, you know, that those movies kind of come along every once in a while where they show us a window into something great, like Zhivago showed us beautiful parts of what turned out to be Spain, but we all thought was Russia, you know, like those are what leave marks on our brains.
And I think this is a great year too, because they're different. They're very different. Well, at least Brazil's very different. But when you look at Out of Africa, then you have a whole country as your location kind of working with you. And then, you know, Color Purple, you're trying to capture this time and place. And Ran, I mean, that is like encapsulated in itself, maybe more so because I don't know the culture, makes it more interesting. And how is the design done for that? Mm-hmm. Well, Witness, you're looking into, yeah, the Amish people and everything. Like, maybe people were really fascinated back then. And, I don't know. Living Amish on TLC has really changed it. I don't know. Like,
I think you're probably right. I mean, I think you hit it on the head that, like, with the exception of Brazil, which is serious, but not as serious as these other ones, these take a critical look at the space that they are in. You know, and that has something to someone. I'm not sure what that means, but they all are set in a place, and that place is about the story. If you were to set Ran in Africa, you wouldn't have the same story. If you were to, you can't even take the Out of Africa out of Africa. Like, no. It is Africa. So that has an interesting thing. And like, I'm trying to compare that to movies that are going to come this Oscar season. You know, the Barbie movie is in a Barbie world. It deserves to be nominated because it was so well done and so beautifully executed.
It does, but we're getting, well, I don't know if we want to have this conversation on here, but yeah, we're getting into, I think, a very good Oscar season. And what I thought Barbie was going to be like a front runner, I don't think anymore from what I've seen. But I think it should be nominated, but I don't know.
What do you mean from what you've seen?
I've seen Napoleon. I mean, I can assume Willy Wonka is amazing. I can assume that just because it's a Scorsese movie, that might, I'm assuming it looks great too. I have not seen that, but I mean, Oppenheimer, and there's five right there, five or six. I mean,
well, you're right. No, that's good. No, you're absolutely right. And like, it is interesting how you get to December and the world kind of changes because so many of the movies try to come out at that time.
Yeah.
So.
Well, thank you. Thank you for this.
Thank you again. I love doing it. So thank you. And thanks to the people for listening to us. Yeah. If you made it this far into it, we love it.
I'm sure they are. Why would they give up on us now?